Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the call today. I'm Michelle Mittelstadt. I'm the Communications Director at the Migration Policy Institute, and I'm joined today by our presenter, Don Kerwin, who is the author of the report that we're going to discuss and who's MPI's Vice President for Programs. We're also joined by Kristen McCabe, who is our research assistant at MPI and who led our effort on this labor standards work to survey all 50 states to find out what state enforcement efforts they have underway with respect to their practices, their staffing, and their budgets. Kristen sent surveys to all 50 state labor departments, and 13 of them decided to participate in this survey. And those state findings are included in the report, which is on our website and is entitled Labor Standards Enforcement and Low-Wage Immigrants Creating an Effective Enforcement System. Don will present his findings with a PowerPoint, and then we'll turn it over to Q&A with you all. And just one last housekeeping item. You can press star 1 at any time during the briefing to get in the queue to ask a question, or to get out of the queue, just press the pound symbol. So with that, I will turn it over to Don, and after that, we will have a Q&A. Don?
Okay, thank you very much. We're very pleased, I have to say, with the timing of this paper's release, because it seems to us that conditions are as ripe for labor standards violations, particularly against unauthorized immigrants, as they've ever been. You have the U.S. in a period of economic turmoil and uncertainty. You have 8 million unauthorized workers who may be more vulnerable now than they've been, given the collapse of comprehensive immigration reform to violations. And you have the federal government and states in a severe budget crisis, meaning that their resources to enforce the law will be more and more limited. So President Obama has argued that unscrupulous employers are using unauthorized workers to drive down wages and working conditions for all workers and to gain a competitive advantage over employers that obey the law. And it's quite clear that effective labor standards enforcement is needed. It would be good for immigrants. It would be good for other workers. It would be good for business. And it's relatively inexpensive, as the report shows. The three main regulatory agencies, their budget is about $1.1 billion per year, compared to the two immigration enforcement agencies whose combined budget is about $17 billion per year. So it's an important issue, but it doesn't get a lot of attention in the immigration debate. The paper basically asks how the federal government, states, and other stakeholders should enforce labor standards with a particular focus on low-wage immigrant workers and within that category on unauthorized workers. And it makes 8 points on the first slide. You know, first it argues that the underlying laws need to be strengthened. It primarily analyzes the Fair Labor Standards Act, which I'll refer to as the FLSA, which covers minimum wage, overtime, and child labor standards, and it's administered by the Wage and Hour Division, which I'll call WHD, of the Department of Labor. That's basically the main focus of this paper. But it also speaks a little bit to the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA, which, as you know, protects union organizing and collective bargaining, and the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which covers safe and healthy workplaces. I'll refer to that as OSHA Act. You know, the paper basically recognizes that these laws set very significant standards. However, it identifies gaps in protection. For example, the FLSA exempts certain farm workers and seasonal and recreational workers from its minimum wage and overtime requirements, and it exempts domestic employees and other categories of workers from its overtime rules. The statute of limitation for the FLSA runs from the time of the employer's failure to pay the proper wages, and it's not told, actually, by the filing of a complaint. Therefore, you know, investigative delays by WHD can threaten the recovery of back pay and liquidated damages, even when a complaint's been filed. Also, WHD doesn't have administrative authority to compel payment of the penalties that it assesses. It relies on the Office of the Solicitor at the Department of Labor to pursue those actions in court. the OSHA Act. OSHA Act applies to employers engaged in interstate commerce but doesn't cover domestic employees. In addition, there's a recurrent rider year in and out in the Department of Labor Appropriations bill that prohibits enforcement of OSHA Act safety and health standards in certain farming operations. And it also bars enforcement of safety standards, except on the basis of complaints, against a long list of low-hazard industries which have 10 or fewer employees. The National Labor Relations Act doesn't apply to agricultural, certain domestic, and other categories of employees. And in 2002, the GAO estimated that 32 million workers didn't have collective bargaining rights under the NLRA or state or local laws, which is rather shocking. You may know that the most substantial penalties under that act, which are payment of back wages and reinstatement, aren't available to unauthorized workers. So the paper makes a number of recommendations on ways to strengthen these laws and to address these various issues, and I won't go into them at length right now. Next slide. Second, the paper argues that the federal government needs to leverage whatever resources it can to effectively enforce the law. You know, basically funding and staffing for WHD and for OSHA declined very significantly through the 2000s. The Obama administration has restored resources to 2001 levels. But the debt and the budget crisis make additional increases unlikely. So the question is, how can the federal government do more with less? Partnering with states is not a silver bullet here. Many states have recently cut their programs or plan to cut budget and staffing levels. Other states don't meaningfully enforce the law. In a survey that we conducted, we found investigative staffing levels on a state from the states ranging from 128 people in New York to 3 in Georgia. However, we thought that states provided very, very good partners and basically were quite positive as to what we found. First, that states devote substantial resources to labor standards enforcement collectively. Many states have developed significant expertise on enforcement. Many have created programs that target industries and practices that are also federal priorities. Many have stronger labor standards than the federal government, and some state statutes cover activities that aren't protected under federal law. And some state agencies, possess administrative authority to compel payment of back wages, liquidated damages, and monetary penalties, which, as I said, WHD doesn't have that authority. So the Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division has a very modest office that tracks state labor legislation and maps certain types of state labor laws. And we're recommending actually the creation of a far more significant federal-state liaison function that would identify state enforcement resources, priorities, activities, would share information on problem industries, employer tactics that are used to avoid liability, which are constantly evolving, and on successful enforcement strategies on both the federal and a state level, and then would facilitate basically information sharing on best practices and look for opportunities for collaboration and synergies. We also recognize that, you know, there's a number of other resources out there and encourage partnerships with consulates, which WHD is actually doing very aggressively, with community-based organizations, faith-based groups, business associations, trade associations, and others. Okay, next. Third, the paper highlights the need to identify and target the industries and firms that substantially violate labor laws. We detail how we think that they ought to be doing that, but we particularly focus on firms and employers that that hire unauthorized immigrants in significant numbers and heavy concentrations. You know, there's widespread agreement that unauthorized immigrants are vulnerable to abuse. However, there's surprisingly little research that systematically compares employers that violate labor standards with those that violate employment verification, which are immigration laws. Okay. So the studies on systematic comparisons aren't there. As a result, we don't have strong empirical evidence on whether employers with unauthorized workers overall are more likely than other employers to violate labor standards. But we do have strong empirical evidence that low-wage immigrants work at high rates in certain industries and firms that substantially violate labor laws, okay? In 1991, the Department of Labor reviewed data on its investigations between 1987 and 1990. It found that the firms that it had investigated violated labor and immigration laws at very high rates. However, the firms that were thought by DOL to be more inclined to employ unauthorized immigrants were only slightly more likely than others to violate both sets of laws. It's kind of an interesting counterintuitive finding. And this might have been due, in fact, to their inability to predict which firms were more likely to hire unauthorized workers of those they investigated. Long and short is our paper recommends that the federal government commission a study that matches industries that violate employer verification laws with those that violate labor laws at high rates. And again, this kind of research would supplement all of the other ways that WHD should be identifying problem industries. Fourth, the paper, next slide. The paper argues that the goal of labor standards enforcement should be to deter violations of the law and to promote widespread compliance with the law, and thus that regulators need to be able to measure the deterrent effect of different strategies. Labor standard agencies will never have the resources to investigate even a small percentage of the nation's employers that are subject to their jurisdiction. The numbers are quite, stark on that. So they need to pursue cost-effective, high-impact strategies that promote compliance among the vast number of employers that they're never going to investigate. You could go to the metrics slide. So this slide is kind of our prize jewel of the report. And as you can see, WHD has traditionally reported on a range of level of effort and enforcement and resource, really, metrics. What it hasn't done is it hasn't demonstrated whether these metrics or how these metrics further compliance and promote deterrence. The metrics show that recent increases in WHD investigators and funding, for example, haven't yet translated into increased enforcement actions, into increased back wages collected or penalties assessed. And the narrative that emerges from, over the course of this chart from 1997 to 2010 is not one of steady progress, Perhaps most strikingly, over the entire period, we couldn't find any discernible kind of relationship between enforcement hours expended and the number of cases concluded or the number of actions initiated by WHD. In addition, the back wages collected and the penalties assessed haven't, significantly increased since FY 1998. Basically, they fluctuated back and forth. The number of WHD-initiated enforcement actions has steadily declined between 1998 and 2010, and there's been a marked decline as well in cases concluded. So WHD has now begun to commission research that seeks to measure the deterrent effect of different strategies by studying compliance in geographic areas in which enforcement previously took place compared to where it didn't. And we think that this is a very promising development. And we have a section of the report that discusses this research and this initiative. Basically, what it shows is that past investigations can increase compliance, but this depends on the prominence of the firms investigated, their geographic location, the frequency of the investigations, and knowledge of the investigations by others in the area. Okay, so the next slide, the fifth point is that an effective system of labor standards enforcement would be basically in a continuous testing of new strategies learning from them, and enforcing the law cycle, kind of a cycle of enforcement and learning. And it would also adopt the best features and strategies of past administrations. And in that vein, we looked at kind of what the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and the Obama administration are trying to accomplish, and what worked and what didn't. Basically, under the Clinton administration, the Wage and Hour Division was attempting to shift its focus from a complaint-based investigation system to targeting industries with the most pronounced compliance problems. Complaints aren't great because, you know, sometimes workers, particularly unauthorized workers, are less likely to complain. So proactive investigations are important. Basically, the Clinton administration was reasoning that pursuing individual claims for back wages that should have been paid in the first instance didn't sufficiently deter violations or otherwise increase compliance. It was targeting industries that employed high concentrations of low-wage workers, including immigrants, particularly people unlikely to complain about violations, industries that were undergoing rapid growth in the global marketplace, had dominant corporations within their networks that could help to affect compliance throughout a series of other related ancillary agencies. So those were the kind of industries it was targeting. And it particularly targeted garment, healthcare, and agricultural industries, as well as some locally targeted industry sectors. What it did was it surveyed, once it identified the industries it wanted to target, it surveyed randomly selected establishments within these industries in order to establish baseline information on noncompliance, and to increase compliance, it pursued a course of graduated education and enforcement actions, including investigations, civil sanctions, referrals for criminal prosecution, entering compliance agreements with lead employers for their entire networks, establishing strike forces on particular issues, and monitoring targeted industries. And then it subsequently surveyed those industries 2 or 3 years later to measure changes in compliance. And what it found, you know, unfortunately, was that compliance rates didn't uniformly or steadily improve in the targeted industries and sectors during these years. And perhaps that was because WHD was measuring its success over a relatively short period of time. Where it did achieve very clear success was in pressuring manufacturers, retailers, and multi-establishment businesses to monitor and to ensure the compliance of their contractors and their suppliers. It found that comprehensive monitoring programs by these lead agencies, which would include payroll inspection and unannounced visits, that in fact that really worked. That was a very successful strategy. Another successful strategy was to embargo, that is to prevent the delivery of hot goods or hot cargo produced in violation of the Fair Labor Standards Act. That was a very effective kind of pressure tool. Okay, under the Bush administration, WHD was prioritizing education activities and compliance assistance primarily to employer groups. And during this period, the number of establishments subject to its jurisdiction grew, but the number of investigators shrunk very, very significantly, and the number of enforcement actions fell sharply. And this is actually a downward trend that's continued during the Obama administration. Staffing at the Office of the Solicitor went down, the number of lawsuits went down, and the GAO issued 2 very critical reports on the WHD's work during this period. One of which showed, for example, that WHD was assessing penalties in only 6% of the enforcement actions in which it had actually found Fair Labor Standards Act violations. It was also criticized for commissioning reports that identified industries that were most likely to violate the law and yet not changing its enforcement priorities accordingly. The Obama administration set a short-term goal of restoring the staffing levels and resource levels, which it's accomplished. What it's trying to do is to create, quote, communities of compliance by adopting the Clinton tactic of targeting leader-dominant employees and that can influence their contractors and others. One of its new areas of focus, however, is on fissured industries, what it calls fissured industries. And those are industries that rely extensively on subcontracting, franchising, third-party management agreements, and self-employed contractors. You know, this is worth pausing on for just a bit. You know, in fissured industries, these dominant employers, they might be the buyer at the end of a supply chain like a Walmart. They might be a big franchisor like a McDonald's, a production coordinator like, you know, these big national home building agencies, or even a purchaser of services from multiple entities like building owners. Basically, WHD is pursuing enforcement actions that take into consideration the structures and the different incentives of the corporate actors in fissured industries. So just to provide an example, fast food outlets are owned both by the brand name organizations, the McDonald's and the Burger Kings, and by franchisees, independent franchisees that operate through franchise agreements. What they found is that the brand name organizations mostly want to preserve the value of their brands, and they want to continue to get revenues from their franchisees. The franchisees are driven by shorter-term considerations of profit. They want revenue, but they also want to reduce costs, right? And that gives them a stronger incentive than branded corporations to keep costs low. This kind of information has all sorts of implications for developing particular enforcement strategies, and we talk about those in the paper. What this research does, it's quite important because I think it underscores the importance of first identifying those leader dominant entities, learning which employers watch each other within particular areas. So if you target one, who will know about it and who will kind of comply with the law as a result of that, and then learning also how they watch each other, whether it's through trade journals or membership associations or publicity or word of mouth, because publicizing enforcement is a very important tactic. So the next slide. So the report also identifies a few additional characteristics of effective labor standards enforcement. For example, it argues that an effective system requires status-blind laws and enforcement. It talks a little bit about the Hoffman Plastics case. I think you know about that 2002 case in which the Supreme Court held that unauthorized workers who were illegally fired for union organizing didn't qualify for back pay under the National Labor Relations Act. Justice Breyer, in his dissent, and other commentators since have basically made the point that this allows employers or encourages them to violate labor laws because there's no penalty for doing so, and it provides an incentive to hire unauthorized workers as a result. The court's reasoning has been extended to sexual discrimination, non-payment of overtime, and workers' compensation cases, and it's also been used to deny recovery of future earnings to injured workers under state statutes and common law. We basically recommend that Congress pass legislation to ensure that the remedies under the Fair Labor Standards Act, OSHA Act, and the National Labor Relations Act are available to all workers, including unauthorized workers. The paper also recognizes the need to take up the issue of the misclassification of employees as independent contractors. Misclassification is not itself a violation of federal law. Employee misclassification, however, can lead to violations of multiple federal and state laws. And independent contractors, for our purposes, don't receive, you know, Fair Labor Standards, OSHA, NLRA, or other statutory protections. IRS estimated in 1984 that 3.4 million people were misclassified, and it's going to update those statistics. This paper actually supports a Department of Labor legislative proposal to shift the burden of proof to employers, requiring them to demonstrate that their employees are correctly classified. And then in conclusion, the paper addresses two ancillary issues. First, the seventh issue, it asks whether rigorous labor standards enforcement would drive employers or workers into the underground economy, you know, defeating the very purpose of these laws. The literature basically shows that informal economies grow due to increased tax and benefit burdens, increased regulation, increased unemployment, and other factors. and it's clear that enhanced labor standards enforcement may raise costs for employers that violate the laws. Hopefully that it will. And some investigations may burden law-abiding employers at a time of pretty significant economic stress. However, it's unlikely that enhanced enforcement of labor laws will so burden employers that substantial numbers will informalize their workforces. That's the conclusion we draw. And partially that's because the U.S. still imposes comparatively modest non-wage obligations on U.S. employers compared to, for example, OECD countries. In addition, there's a minimal risk of employers being targeted for enforcement, even with the increases in funding. However, we do think that possible growth in the informal economy and seeing if that's tied to enhanced labor standards enforcement is certainly worth monitoring. And then finally, eighth, the paper asks if enhanced labor standards enforcement might lead to a decrease in illegal employment and migration. This is an argument that you've probably heard many times, an argument many of us have made, basically that standards ought to be enforced. This would reduce unauthorized hiring by eliminating the ability of certain employers to exploit unauthorized workers, thus removing the incentive to hire them, weakening the work magnet that draws unauthorized immigrants to the United States and that keeps them here, and ultimately would make the jobs more appealing to U.S. workers by increasing wages and working conditions. That's a large claim, and in fact, no study has established a link between increased labor standards enforcement and decreased unauthorized employment or decreases in illegal migration. And the paper tentatively concludes that labor standards enforcement may complement, but it's not going to eliminate the need for, obviously, for immigration reform or for traditional immigration control strategies. However, if it proved to be an effective means of immigration control, if it had any impact, it would certainly be a cost-effective way to go about this work, and it would be a strong argument that some of the immigration control and enforcement funding should be directed to this work. So it's a very long, involved paper, complicated paper, and I'm happy to, and Kristen McCabe, who kind of handled all of the state survey, is here with me, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have about it. Thank you.
For the report, Labor Standards Enforcement and Low-Wage Immigrants, Creating an Effective Enforcement System, please visit our website at www.migrationpolicy.org. And for more on the work of the Labor Markets Initiative at the Migration Policy Institute, visit migrationpolicy.org/LMI.